space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim, and with me, of course, are Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Drag on! And that St. George can bugger off for a start. That was my mate he killed. Draco was his name. Anyway.
And it is St. George's Day, so of course.
St. George's Day.
No, no, you know what we celebrate right here on Retrek? It's Willow's birthday is what we celebrate.
Of course. But more importantly, it's Willow's birthday.
Did she kill any dragons? Did she? Bollocks. No, she's a good girl.
Well, I don't mean killing dragons is not necessarily a bad thing.
No. Oh, you bitch.
So, of course, we're talking about the latest episode of Discovery, Face the Strange, because that's all to do with St. George. And just before we get into the episode, a little bit of housekeeping. Facebook has changed how StreamYard works with it. So apologies
tonight.
If anyone makes any comments on the Facebook, we may not see them. We'd suggest going on the YouTube channel if they're not coming through.
I have got the Retrek Facebook page open, so I'll see if you comment on there and it doesn't come onto here. So...
There we go. But for now, we're winging it. We're trying to find out. But yeah, Face the Strange then, episode 4 of season 5 of Discovery. The first one where they don't find a clue. But I would say, for my money, easily the best one we've had this season. And me and Elliot were just talking before we went live. Possibly the best one we've had since season 3, really.
Yeah.
I definitely agree with that. I mean, what I was... Yeah. I messaged Jim only because Elliot didn't confirm if he'd seen it. I'm always careful and spoilers.
The things I've been doing at the weekend, work I've been doing, my hands have been really messy, so I've been sort of like...
I'm by Saturday, I'm thinking, it's like, it probably has, but you know what? I'll mention it. This will be the one time where he's been away on the week or whatever, you know. So I messaged him. But yeah, my kind of like capsule thing was that it's a really good episode. But it could have been a perfect... Like, there's some missed opportunities in this. There's so many things...
Definitely.
There's missed opportunities, but it's still... It was an enjoyable episode, and some of them I've not been enjoying that much, as I've been quite vocal about.
Yeah. I mean, still
very... And I had no problem going back and re-watching this episode. Last week, I found quite a chore.
Yeah, and it's one, I think... We often say this with, like, how serialised... like Discovery and Picard were, that there's not many that you just go back to and pick one episode out, but you probably could just pluck this one out and watch it. Like, yes, it's linked to the ongoing story, but
you could watch this as a standalone episode.
It's largely standalone.
Similarly to another time loop episode, the Mud one, where he kind of gets him in time loop. That's a very standalone in the middle of a wider plot. I do like this. I kind of applaud the fact that they've got an ongoing kind of like, obviously it's of a piece, but I like it when they do a standalone every now and again, just give you something a little bit different. And this was just
you need
fun.
It every now and again just to have that.
Yeah.
Like, it's like most Star Trek shows will be in the mood for some Star Trek. But you don't want to watch 10 episodes. You've got an hour or two that you've got free on an evening night. Oh, I'll watch some Star Trek. And you pick an episode to go watch. But if you've got a whole series you've got to watch for a story, I'm sorry, I can't always set aside 10 hours in an evening. And do I really want to set aside 3 or 4 days to watch it back over?
It's a very fair point.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a good one that you could just pick up. Right, comments are definitely working on YouTube. David says, greetings, fellow time bugs.
And people who normally go on Facebook and never give StreamYard permission, have you noticed your name actually comes up if you use YouTube?
This is
without
true.
Having to alter any settings or give permissions.
See, because YouTube doesn't hate us. I'm just going to say
not yet.
No,
it had, it, It had a bit of a tiff with us at the SFW Live event because we encroached on copyright. But
I've got to say that I think we deserved.
We did. That was a lot of tiff, and we deserved it.
Yeah, we did.
We are holding our hands up. Yet we were out of order. What we did. But the people who saw it live, it was good fun, I thought. But then,
yes, it was. Yeah. So the episode starts with a 15 hours ago caption. Now, unlike in the season premiere where we got 4 hours ago, this one didn't offend me. I mean,
this actually made sense because it was actually what Lal and Locke were doing.
Yeah.
Was it their names right? Or is it Lal and
Mal and Locke?
Mal and Locke, sorry. Were doing while they were going to trill. It showed how they were going to get around the problem.
And also, yeah. it's fine. We don't mind there to be 15 hours earlier, but this isn't just cut from later on in the episode. It's not 15 hours later. You know, 15 hours earlier. It's adding some context. Oh, yeah, exactly. And I had a new theory. It's Locke, the boy one.
Yes.
I had this theory because I was like looking at his makeup during this episode, and you notice his nose is kind of flat. And it kind of reminded me a little bit of a Tosk. I think he's a Tosk from the first series of Deep Space Nine. I think that's why they bonded over the fact that they both wanted freedom, because she's like...
And he does say, we won't be hunted anymore, doesn't she, to him?
Because, you know, she's been hunting down, but like maybe that's his thing. He rebelled against that, maybe even inspired by the Tosk we met, who was friends with Chief O'Brien. Maybe Chief O'Brien. No, actually, that can't work for the time. But ignore that bit, because I forgot we're in a different time zone. But it could still be, an earlier Tosk who...
I like that
theory.
Furthermore...
Let's not be hunted anymore.
And the makeup's not that far. It's different, but like that could account for
it's
them.
It's similar enough.
Different,
After you told me that, I was obviously a bit more on the lookout for it. And the geezer that they buy the thing off looks a lot like one of the hunters from the same episode of Deep Space Nine. So, I'm on board. Either that or they're just digging into the Paramount makeup tray and pulling out her. But, I like that theory. And like you say, it fits with the whole hunted thing.
Yeah, it would be a great character point as well. Yeah, the mixture of the makeup and the plotting, it just, it would really work.
Yeah, and I love it where they do that, just pull out things from the past and use them in a new way. Yeah. Back on Discovery then, when we go to now, which, you see, if we're getting into on-screen chat, I don't like now, and I don't like things that say present day.
Yeah, but that's just out of date.
Anyway. So, Adira and Gray, then, they're still friends, apparently. Like, we talked about this last week, how it was all a bit something and nothing. Now, it's even more something and nothing. I don't feel like we needed an extra button on that.
Cut the bit from the other episode, and then this bit would seem fine, because it's like, we're catching up on them. Oh, they're friends now. Yeah, great.
This could have satisfied
that whole plot line.
Well, that's like we said, because they built it up so much, it was just the climax when they split up, and it was like, we're not dating anymore. Oh, okay.
I don't feel like we needed to revisit this again soon after last week when it was all load and nothing anyway.
We love them as a couple, but like, it made sense. They've both gone to their future roles. Like, just have them.
Anyway.
We don't need an episode for it, especially not two back-to-back split-up episodes as well, was the worst crime without.
Yes, but that's last week's problem rather than this week's problem. And the point of showing Adira is so that we can see the little spider thing scuttling about as it does throughout these opening sequences. And plot-wise, they've got to the coordinates that were on the clue last week, but there's nothing there. So that's where we sort of see that we're going to be in for a bit of a different episode. They've not got to the next clue yet, whereas the first three episodes were kind of clue.
Yeah,
whereas this one, we knew this were coming because we knew there was only two more clues to find, and we've got more than that episodes.
There weren't specifically difficult clues, were they? Like, what has 5 points and is in the sky? Is it a star? And that wasn't the actual clue, but they were almost to that level.
It might as well have been, yeah.
And actually, we say we've got two more episodes and we've got clues. So you've got this one, and then, of course, once you've got everything assembled, then there's got to be a climactic fight. So we're queued up now, I think.
Yeah. Well, how many more clues have we got to find?
Oh, you said two more, so I was just going back.
I think it's two more. And we're up to episode 4, aren't we? So there's 6 more.
Oh, sorry, I thought you meant 2 more episodes more than the piece.
Oh, no, we got 2 more. So, yeah, we've got to find a clue once roughly every 2 episodes from now on if we're going to keep on track. But like you say, there's no doubt.
I think you probably want all the clues solved by episode 7, maybe 8 at the latest.
I think so, yeah.
A big 2-episode finale where there's a big battle, hopefully with the Breen and...
Yeah, well, the Breen we can talk about.
I think at some point, Lock and Key or whatever they're called, they're going to get a couple of bits of it maybe. Like, yeah, so it's not able to
Lock and Key, I'd like that.
Yeah, I think it's from a Netflix show. Anyway, I sort of think they're going to have a reason why all the parts don't come together. So maybe, like, if you do have a 2-part finale, I reckon at the end of the first part of that is when they come together, and then they've got to try and stop them using it.
I'm not sure
if
because
together too early, they can use it.
No, I think they'll be the last sort of episode 10 will be sort of goodbyes to everyone on the last half of it because.
They said
that they found out about halfway through shooting the series that it was.
No, they had to go back for reshoots, they said.
Did they actually have to go back?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I know that they had to reshoot about half of the final 2 episodes?
Something like that, yeah.
So that's why I think that whatever happens is going to wrap up a lot or pretty much by the end of episode 9. You might have it end on a cliffhanger and get 10-15 minutes of episode 10 finishing it, but then it's all going to be goodbyes. And
I think some of it will
be. It's going to be an awful episode.
And well, hopefully not. The more I watch of this season, though, the more I'm convinced, even if they hadn't officially been told, I feel like they knew the writing was on the wall. It's like, the whole premise of this episode is like, let's revisit the past of the show. It's almost like honouring the show itself, which you tend to get reflective like that when you know it's your final season. And it feels appropriate that if this is the final season that we get this kind of whistle-stop tour of the history of the show itself.
I wish we'd got more of in this episode, to be honest.
I do
for so many flashbacks we didn't see. You know, we could have had Lorca. I mean, I know some of these I know are difficult gets maybe because like 3 of them that I'm going to mention, Lorca, Ash and Sarek, all played by British actors. They might not be in the country, all kind of with very good careers.
You've also got that they didn't use old footage to use that the existing actors sort of made up to the
street
all. So you have we're going to do this time travel one, but we're not apart from they brought back Ariane, so they did bring one of the characters.
Yeah, we got one character.
You got one character, but you're pretty much only using your existing set, and they still managed there, even when they had really in depth things that had to do with like the bridge crew. Do you want to give them a line or two?
think about it. You could have had the ones which are easier gets that you could have. I mean, Rain Wilson, I reckon, would have come back as Mud without like charging them the earth. You've got like bloody Pike and Spock are filming just, you know, in the same lot. Like they I'm sure would have come in for a day's shooting. You've got for Christ's sake. I mean, okay, we might be the only ones who are excited about this. I'd like to think there's some others, though. The guy with the bird alarm clock, he could have come back. You know, there's just like, just anyone from the past. Like, why not? Like, as opposed to Wayne getting one bridge crew member who we never learned anything about anyway, so it really wasn't that impactful. Like,
yeah, it would have been really nice to, particularly Lorca, I would have liked to have seen Lorca back.
I mean, they just don't even, they don't, it feels like they just gone out of their way to, like, they just talk about kind of past episodes as opposed to showing us. Like, even when it's like, oh, yeah, that pal out the window, that was a nasty one. Let's walk away from that. Yeah, because we wouldn't want to see anything.
Yeah,
and it was that nostalgia.
It was kind of a whistle-stop tour of, oh, look, we're at the season 2 finale. Now we're at the season 3 finale.
Yeah.
But yeah, it should have felt more of a celebration, like, let's go back to the good memories we've got. And yeah, that would have involved seeing Pike and Giorgio. And
I mean, we've seen this kind of episode before.
You've got Giorgio's busy shooting on a lot somewhere with them anyway, so you could have
exactly
had
you would have thought
if the dates don't work out, she is difficult to, like, I mean, God bless her, she obviously found a trek because she came back to do that, but yeah.
Well, yeah, but you've got that thing where surely you can go, right, we've got 3 live shows, or a movie and 2 live shows that have interacted with each other. Can't we sort of go, yeah, we want, can't we all work out that one day we're going to get them in the same place? How filming works, they don't have to come in sequence that we're filming this scene of season five. Episode 4, so you've got to come in on the 22nd of March or whatever, just as a hypothetical, because TV filming doesn't work like that.
Only meant with Giorgio, because if they can't get in on the days when she's filming or she's already filmed, she is such a big get. Like, it was, I mean, she's obviously, as I say, she's obviously a big fan, so she came back to do the movie. Mm-hmm. But justifying in a filming schedule, then coming back for something else, I just don't think would happen now, unfortunately. You know, even though she'd probably want to, but she's still going to have a career here.
Yeah.
It's a big trekkie, you know, but
yeah. It's difficult. But yeah, it would have been nice to have had a few more cameos.
Like Fracture in Voyager, and you've got like Deep Space Nine. Like, they've all done one of these episodes, and they all have brought in some cameos and stuff. This is the only one which sort of really failed to do that.
Yeah. But before we get to the timey-wimey shenanigans, after we got to know Reese the other week with his story about how he loves ships.
Oh, the guy's also Bryce, yeah?
The guy. No, because we get real Bryce this episode.
Yeah,
there you go.
You see them in the same scene.
Bryce came back.
They've used holograms and a different face. They're very cunning, Bryce guy.
But Reese actually gets almost a tiny little bit of a subplot. Like, it's there to inform Rayner's stuff, but, you know, he does raise a good point. They could be following us, and Rayner's like, no, don't be silly. We'd know if they were following us. And this is what leads Michael to take him aside, and they beam to the ready room, which is ridiculous. But I know they have to facilitate the plot in this episode.
Well, no one gets the steps in the future.
No, well, that's it. But the plot does hinge around the fact that they have to be beaming at that exact time. So we'll let them off. They're using it as a plot device this week. Yeah.
But you've got to say, to do a plot like they're doing with Rayner, you really have to, let's face it, like, there's not going to be that many surprises. He's going to come in gruff. You know, he's going to be won over. He's going to, like, but he's maybe, hopefully, going to teach them something along the way as well. But it's like, you really have to have a great actor. It has to be really well written. And he's just knocking out of the park. I think
he's great.
Just,
yeah.
In addition, Callum Keith Renee is just, I think I got his name correct, but yeah, he's amazing.
Rayner's great. And he's sort of filling that Captain Shaw role where you're just getting to really love this character. Putting in the Starfleet Academy show.
Could happen.
It could. So this is the problem with Discovery, is that the best characters are the ones that they bring in for one season. Like, Lorca was great. I'd love to see more of Lorca. We are seeing more of Pike.
Giorgio,
great. And yeah, now Rayner. But yeah, so the spider thing gets into the engineering thing. I'm using all the technical terms here. And as they beam, they go back in time, and this time it's to the start of season three. It's when they first got into the 32nd century, and we get the return of the blue uniforms.
Can I also, there's just, there's something weird, like, I don't know why they include the plot points, like, but they've always got to be, they've always got to go right back to the same room for reason.
I think it's because of the sort of time and space reset.
Yeah,
it's really plot, to do with but it's that, like, but... why when you're writing it, do you go right? Because, I want to be appearing in this
they're stuck in a is it a conical sphere?
Oh, again, I get it for the episode. I just don't know why they.
Why the writers restrict themselves that much?
Yeah.
Well, it also. I don't know.
And
it's sort of showing that it keeps doing jumps through time for sort of a short space of time, but then it comes back to where it was because they're not just moving through time, you're also moving through space, which is what's altering the length of the time jumps, which is why it resets to the same place.
Again, within the plot, but it's just like, I'm thinking from writing perspective, you've got, first of all, they've always got to go back to somewhere which is fairly neutral as opposed to being right in the action.
Yeah.
And then later on in the episode, they restrict it further by going, it's like, let's meet up in this corridor. Now, again, I get why in the universe they'd want to be away from people, but if you don't give that as an option that they just randomly, you can get them just straight into wherever the action is and they can find a way like sync up with Stamets with them as well, you know.
It's one that doesn't really work when you think about it. It's all well and good saying, oh, they always go back to the ready room, but it's like, but the ready room was in different points in space in all these.
No, like, well, I think the whole point is that the entire ship resets to where it was in space and time.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That's why they're moving back to the same spot.
It means you have to accept that the ship, they're anchored to the ship wherever the ship is, sort of. I'm not sure. But, yeah, it's when the
tiny wimey.
Yeah.
Adjacent. Anything time episode is immediately Doctor Who adjacent.
Yeah, when they jump back again, it's to when the ship was being built. And I know there's people up in arms online saying, we don't like this idea of ships being built on the planet.
Well, I think this is really sloppy writing. And I'll tell you why.
Go on.
Because by the time of in TOS era, the ships were built in space docks or etc. But on the 2009 movie, the Kelvinverse, they built them on Earth. But this isn't the Kelvinverse. This is prime timeline.
True.
So whoever's written this and sent them back to San Francisco has really screwed up and not learnt the Star Trek properly. They've gone with Kelvin timeline for where the ship's built.
I mean, I could buy that in the Kelvin timeline, everything went on planet because they have security risk after Vulcan beam. You know, you can make the argument for that. And I could justify, just to make this work, you know, like maybe they built some on the planet. Maybe they built most of them in space. This one was a special build. It was like top secret, so they wanted to keep on the planet for secrecy.
Sees it when it launches for the first time.
Well, yeah, but like, you know what I mean? It's like, but they want secrecy, so they built it. And then at some point, they've got to make it leave the planet.
The other bit you can do as well is like, well, maybe they build bits of it and then they assemble it in space, you know.
But like were saying that this is...
But this was sort of like it was just about to be ready for final inspection.
Yeah, yeah.
My greater problem with this was more that... So she suddenly realizes where they are, realizes they're on Earth, Starfleet headquarters, from where she comes, from the time she comes, and she's not just a bit in awe. She's not like, wow, we're here. Like, this is where it all began. Like, this is my time. You know, as much as I love being in the future, and that is my time now, I'm here now. You know, like, there's no reaction from her at all. And this is why, again, I want to make it really clear, I did enjoy this episode. I enjoy it for what it is. But again, so many just missed opportunities to make it from good to great, you know. Great.
The thing is that, like we said at the start of the episode, this is arguably the best episode since season 3.
Yeah, I agree.
But the problem is it's not actually a high bar to get over, isn't that? Because season four was that bad a season.
Yeah, no, I agree. Why wouldn't you react to that? That's such a good moment.
There's a lot of people should be reacting in a different way to, but instead of just it's single-minded focus on the mission. And if anything, she's sort of shown us for the last four seasons that she can't be single-minded on a mission because she gets her emotions come to the fore so often because she was obviously raised on Vulcan that way.
I mean, she will cry for hours because Book said hi on his way past, but she's on her home planet in her home time when Discovery's about to launch, and that doesn't trigger off any emotions. That's
completely agree with you. It's bad. It's sloppy writing.
I never thought of that. To be fair, I did buy into
in the second viewing, I've got to admit
they were more focused on the mission and what's going on and everything.
That for 4.5 seasons now, it's shown that. Well, actually, not so much for the first season, maybe not even the second, but since she's got to the future and she's all emotional now, that she can't concentrate on the mission without emotions. She's got to be...
And even in the earlier episodes, the emotion, the single-mindedness was from a rage point of view, so it was an emotional response, just a different one, you know. Yeah. Whereas this is the only time when we see her where she's no emotional connection to being home.
I do like how sort of quickly they start to piece together the mystery and they solve it. And by solving it, they're informing the audience. Like they work out really quickly, right? The reason we're not affected is because we were beaming at the time. And I just like, it doesn't feel spoon fed. It's the information is given to us at the right time. So we can just roll with it without worrying about it.
And she very quickly realizes Samut won't be affected because of his when he got infected by tardigrades because he's half tardigrade, which is a nice callback to remind us of that because it hasn't been.
I love the terminology.
Ages.
I wish they'd used your terminology half tardigrade. I like that.
Yeah. No, I really liked that idea as well that they've not ignored something from a past episode.
Yeah,
they're acknowledging it. And they're using the character well within the story. So, yeah, I really like that.
Well, when we first see Stem, it's again, it's another kind of like a bit of a weird missed opportunity that we see him like impaled from whatever's happened to him in the past. But like they don't, like, why not show that happening to him? Like, wouldn't that be a huge dramatic moment? It's like he suddenly effectively beams into, like, he quantum leaps into himself, essentially. Wouldn't it be great if he goes like, but oh, God, where am I? Like, something goes through his guts, or, you know, whatever.
Well, yeah, he's obviously moved into engineering at that time, and that's when it's happened, and he's been taken.
Yeah.
It would be great if we saw that, and then him waking up in the bed, and Hugh going, it's like, man, are you okay? And he's like, no, I've got to save the future. You know, like, he could have done that.
Yeah.
I do like the way it's played for laughs when Burnham explains it. Where she says, well, we need Stamets because he lives outside time because of his tardigrade DNA. It's like, you know what? Don't worry about it. And it's like, yeah, I like that.
And Raiden's sort of, what?
Yeah. Of course, he didn't know that. He read all their files. But it was secret, so maybe he doesn't.
Yeah. I think Raina makes Burnham better. I think this is one of the problems is she's always playing against people who agree with her. Everyone agrees with her. Even if they disagree with her 5 minutes later, like, or 5 seconds later, they're agreeing with her.
Yeah.
I like the fact this is someone who doesn't agree with her, but then they come to sort of a compromise. Like, they both learn from each other.
They can both see each other's ways work.
Yeah. And she even says in this episode, which, like, you could knock me over with a feather. When
this isn't just one way is the right way. You can do.
Oh, sorry, your video stopped for a second, so I think we accidentally talked over each other. Sorry, after you, mate.
I didn't hear what you were saying. It's okay. You were saying about...
I think we're having buffering issues. We're caught in our own time.
All I was going to say is...
Hi there!
All I was going to say is that... you could knock me over with a feather when she actually goes, like, maybe we have come too complacent. It's like, my God, you're admitting to the fact that emotions aren't the answer to everything. I mean, it's like, don't get me wrong, I love emotional content. That's what I love Star Trek for. But it's always been that played against your duty, and that's where there's the, like, where does one end and one begin? She's always, like, emotions solve everything. Like, chain of command doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if, like, someone's being insubordinate or talking out of turn. It doesn't matter. Emotion. Whereas I think he brings that kind of challenge again of, like, well, where does duty end and where does emotion begin? And
yeah,
I think that's always been great about Star Trek, and it feels like he brings that back. And yeah, again, she admitted that emotion isn't the end to everything. It's like, oh, that's great. I was wondering.
We're getting there. Season 5. We're getting there. We're getting character growth. Then, yeah, they jump to the season 3 finale, and you have this cute scene with Raina and Reno, who, as we've said before, is always a delight whenever she turns up. So that was good fun. But then, I was saying the other week, we're never going to get any more of the Calypso timeline, and it appears that they're making a concession to that, finally. Now, I'm not sure it really fits, but they're trying.
At first, when we first got to here, I thought, oh, we're going to see Calypso, so we're going to bring in, what was his name? Began with C.
Yeah, I can't remember his name.
It was sort of like the book air prototype.
He very much was. Yeah, Kraft,
that's it. I thought first we were going to see Kraft with Sarah when we heard that music playing.
Yeah.
That they were going to walk onto the bridge and it was going to be that. But I also think now that we've seen this possible future, that Calypso is set after that.
Yes, I think so.
And now they're changing that future.
Yeah, I think that's what we're doing.
Calypso's been, yeah, we've acknowledged that timeline now in the main show, but we're not going to see Calypso because they're going to fix the timeline.
I think that's what they've done.
The only thing we have to do now is either one of two things. It's either they've changed the timeline before, and that's why Discovery looks like classic Discovery in the original one, or it's like with any of these kind of things where they kind of like do another iteration where you've got to just imagine you actually saw future Discovery. Like you've got to make that little concession.
You've got to make that little concession.
Yeah. But I like it.
I like the fact that they've gestured to it rather than going, look, we'll hold his hands up. We didn't think it through. The storyline's not gone in the direction we anticipated it to. At least they've done this, and they've gone, Calypso exists in a possible future timeline. So, yeah, okay, it ticks the box for us as fans to go, right, you've not forgotten about it, thank you.
Yeah.
And because of, we find out here, who made this time device.
Go on.
Zara says it's a Kremen causality device.
She does.
Which is the Kremen year of hell. And they have lots of possible different timelines how they keep rewriting.
Yeah. And that makes loads of sense that they would be involved in the Time Wars because they were into that
delicious.
Sort of stuff.
I missed that. That's great.
Did anyone else get a vibe as well when they first get to what we'll keep calling it the Calypso timeline? But It very much reminded me of the first episode of Red Dwarf. It was kind of everybody's dead, Dave.
Yeah, they're all dead.
I didn't think about it, but yeah, it's brilliant.
How you say it, yeah.
It's a serious take on everybody's dead, Dave.
Yeah. What? Saru? Yeah, he's dead, Michael.
Even Saru.
Tilly's not dead, is she? No, Tilly's dead. Everybody's dead, Michael.
Tilly's dead, Michael.
Gosh, let her quantum leap into here.
That's a nice theory.
Is Calypso Zora's attempt at a dream? Maybe.
It's quite possible because she does mention when Michael's there, she goes, am I dreaming again?
That's a lovely theory, yeah.
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 It could be. And it that would also explain why the ship looks that way. Maybe Zora thought, you know what?
I like the retro look.
Yeah. I'm sat here on my own for 1,000 years. I might as well change my look.
Yeah.
And I know we haven't got there yet, but just while we're stuck for David's comments there, he made another one which I did quite like. It's like, Tilly, critical message to future Michael. I like what you've done with your hair. That would be so...
I tell you what, Kirk would have had something to say about her hair, and then I don't think Michael would have been able to say it's still regulation.
Yeah, good point.
I don't think Kirk's got many legs to stand on with his hair either.
No, that's... I mean, Kirk's was always regulation because it never changed, almost as though it were not natural. Anyway,
when Trek goes wrong at the movies, we did show that.
When Trek goes wrong in the movie, redux in the possible conversation. So,
possibly.
You know.
We shall see what happens.
Might be.
Hint, hint. Anyone, any organisers of events who might be watching? Okay, so Zora does some of the working out for them, and we introduce this idea of a time funnel, which is why the timelines, they're spending a bit longer in each one and then a bit shorter again.
And it's because they're moving through space as well as time, which is why I actually resetting to the same place.
So I like that. And so they now start to formulate a plan, which is where they introduce this idea of we'll meet on deck 13, and they meet up with Stamets, and I do like his excuse of there's a spore breach, everyone needs to get out.
Yes, his excuses were delicious all the way through.
And I like the bit later on in the episode where he says, I am a bit worried that none of my staff know that's not a real thing.
That was brilliant. And
I like his conversation with our, what's her name? Reno.
Reno,
where he starts going, in theory, if this was happening, how would I? And she's going, are you in a time loop? Are you stuck in a time loop?
Yeah, he's like, no.
I actually wish they'd stuck it that she did know, like, because it's going to reset anyway, so you may have well had a go.
Yeah, I like to think she'd worked it out, because the thing is, if you live in the Star Trek universe...
I think she'd worked it out very, very quickly. As soon as he started asking these questions, she's going, you're stuck in a time loop, but you're not allowed to interfere in the past, so I'm just going to let it go.
Yeah, that's it. It's fine.
But because I like pressing your buttons, I'm going to make you feel awkward for 30 seconds. Are you stuck in a time loop? Are you sure you're not stuck in a time loop?
Because if you live in the Star Trek universe, if anyone starts asking you something weird, then you're going to think, right, that weird thing is happening to them. Like, you can't just have a hypothetical discussion. Like, us being geeks, we might say something like, what superpower would you have if you could have any? If we lived in the Star Trek universe and someone said that, you'd be like, has Q offered you some superpowers because you need to report that to the captain? You know, it's have a whimsical conversation.
I just think they should have had it because, like, I mean, I'm with Elliot's theory that she did know anyway, but it's like, I just think they should have let it stand within the episode, like, you know, prime within the episode. We know in the episode she knew what it was, because that was just, it was something so nice and so different they'd never done before. I go, brilliant, she's going to know. It's like, then they go, only kidding. It's like, I mean, that's still fun, but, you know, just letting it stand.
Yeah, I would have liked it.
But that's why I like in my headcanon that she does know.
I like that.
And she keeps saying, are you sure you're not in the time loop? And keeps saying it to him, because we've seen it lots of times. She likes pushing Stamets' buttons because she knows it's easy to wind up.
Yeah.
It's also a nice kind of spin on that, because usually you've got them back and forward arguing, whereas she's just railing into him. And then when he asks about a theory, she's almost like, okay, well, if you're not going to bust my chops back, okay, yeah, I'll listen to your theory. It's like, you got that, like, she very well played it. Like, there was a look of surprise almost that he wasn't firing back on this occasion. And that was very nicely done. I like that it's not said, because that,
But that's another reason why you think straight away, she knows he's stuck in a time loop.
Yeah.
She's worked out immediately because he's acting differently than he normally acts with her. And he's asking the questions about how do I get out of a time loop?
Yeah,
I mean, you could have even held it where he kind of, like, again, I'm going to just use the term quantum leap doubt, and, like, had him there going, like, what am I doing here? And she'd go, time loop.
Yeah, that would have been very good. Yeah, that would have been excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then I know we poke fun at it, and rightly so. But I did enjoy the Michael and Book scene in this episode. I thought it when they jumped into that timeline where they're still together, presumably living together as a couple, and it had that brilliant sort of awkwardness of the fact that Michael, you know, the Michael of our current time is no longer with him, but she's got to sort of pretend to be in order to not tip him off. And it did create a great sense of awkwardness. And I think they didn't give in to the melodramatic side of it too much. Like, you could have had Michael coming out of this situation and just bursting out in tears and say, oh, it was so difficult seeing him. And but we didn't go that far.
I am going to say, we've knocked the writers already this episode for being lazy, but can we give them a big round of applause for not falling back on what they normally do there and making the best thing in tears?
I feel like they played it just right. Yeah. They didn't give in to the, as you say, the more typical urges of the screenwriting as it has been. And it actually managed to elicit an emotional response. You know, it's like, I feel for Michael in this situation. And it's showing us that there was things about this relationship that worked and were good, and there was chemistry between them. And I liked that. I think that's possibly the only good bit we've done with Michael and Buck this season so far.
Well, I'd go one further on that same thing and say I think it would have been even more impactful if they had just left it at them broken up, not like him, like them leaving it open to basically them get back together again, which looks like that's what they led into a couple episodes back. I think if they just had them broken up and her dealing with that hike, and then she has to pretend to be with him, again, like you say, it's a brilliantly realised scene, but I think that would have been...
Yeah, it would have hit harder, but they are totally getting them back together by the end of the season. Yeah, so you can push that thought out.
But if they were going to do that, I wish they would at least just gone straight for it and not had the breakup episode to the makeup episode.
Yeah, true. Then we get sort of the centerpiece of the episode, which when they go to the next timeline and we get the Michael versus Michael fight. I thought this was very well done, and I like the fact that future Michael wins, which I suppose it's a little bit reductive to go, well, she's come on as a character so she can win a fight. Like, I get what they're going for metaphorically, that I actually thought
the fight was really cleverly done, because you saw them making exactly the same moves against each other.
And we've also got to break down. I like the fact that when they kind of both enter the turbo lift and she stops her for a minute and starts talking to her, it's like, oh, is she going to be able to control her feral past self? It's like, because again, when me and Jim sort of talked a little bit about this, I was saying, it's like, I really feel like this is a Burnham that she's toned the line. She knows she's done wrong and she is willing to do penance. However, the daily of people just everywhere she turns, just judging her. Whatever she does is not good enough. Like, there is, like, it's really well done that first series that it takes a while for everyone to be one round. And yeah, I could imagine it's like, oh, fuck off. I'm going to have a shapeshifter version of myself when I don't even want to be myself. And I think that's just the moment which breaks her. You know, it's like, oh, okay, no, that's not happening. Right. I'm going to wail on this one. And like, they did such a good job with the hair and makeup that she does look like her younger self. Like, I know.
Oh, definitely.
5 years, but it's like, yeah, it's really nice.
And you could I did see
a photo, and it did of a comparison side by side, and you could see little differences, but it's very, very close.
Yeah, it was very well done, and she did a lot with the performance to remind you, oh, yeah, Michael is quite different to when we first met her, you know, looking at it now.
If anything, this does showcase what a wonderful actor Sneakwood
Martin Green. Yeah, she's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes
it's like being badly written.
That's what I mean.
I think she's played what she's been given to play.
Yeah.
But I think it's been... I think the character development has gone in the wrong direction at times.
That's my point. I think it's like the writing is sometimes so melodramatic that it makes her look like not as good an actor as she is. Like, and, yeah, and it's just so nice to have scenes like this, which reminds us that it's like, man, both the performances she's giving here are amazing,
yeah,
against yourself. And that's not easy to do. You know, I just want to give her a props because, yeah, again, bad writing can sometimes actually make an actor not look as good as they are. And I think that's happened sometimes here, unfortunately.
I just want,
agree.
We have a retrek miracle.
Go on.
Ooh.
Jodie has learnt how to get her name on the screen and not be Facebook user.
Oh, yeah,
there we go.
She went on YouTube, but we'll give it to you, Jodie. We'll give it
round of applause for Jodie.
Well, Elliot, we could all write one. Thank you.
Oh, it's a mark on my screen.
No, Elliot, good. I'm not dissing Elliot. I'm just saying, what about me and Jim?
I actually thought that somehow that comment was written in French because it looked on my screen like it said Elliot could write an episode. So it looked like the E had an accent, but it was actually a little speck on my screen. So there we go. So yeah, Elliot, there you go. You've got to write an episode of Star Trek. Then the plan is that we have to go to warp and drop out of the warp bubble. And I thought it was quite funny that they actually talk about the physics of that in this episode, when what happened in the first episode was Michael got flung out of a warp bubble and was fine.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that three episodes later, we're actually talking about, well, you couldn't really do that without dying.
Yeah. Like we did say at the time, has the suit got inertial dampers built in, which seems a bit silly what they did.
Hey, you'd have to have inertial diapers if you did that to me.
The inertial dampeners on Discovery were strong enough to save them.
That's what we decided, that's ultimately...
I think that is a fair enough comment that it would have super souped up inertial dampeners compared to most ships, because it uses the spore drive and it's been designed for spore drive, and they know it's going to be moving...
Through the mycelial network.
Yeah, so they weren't sure, so they had to really beef it up more.
And I'm also thinking you're in the 30th century?
32nd now.
No, when they do this, this is before.
Oh, when they do
you're
this.
Right, you're right.
It's back.
Because Ariane's still there.
Because I was going to say, in the future, you could also say it's like they've worked over some problems. And now you're right, yes, in the past. Yeah, but I still think it works. I still like it. Yeah.
This bit to me didn't quite ring true where they're talking to Arium and Michael says, Arium will believe me because I'll tell her that she died.
She's going to die.
And somehow that makes Arium believe that Mike, like, I didn't get what the logic was there. Like, and the rest of the group, she'd never do that. Like, well, of course she would if she was ordered to. And it was
that was my point.
But I was thinking these are all Starfleet officers. And we've seen it so many times that Starfleet officers were willing to give the life to save the crew. And everyone else on the bridge is going, no, she would never give a life to save the ship.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah,
I thought that was really weird.
Yeah, I thought the that jabbed a bit awkward. It was bad. It was like, have you ever watched Star Trek?
The only thing I could think of is that they were relying on something they've never shown us. So, like, there's my thinking again. Because I, like you guys, I don't think this works. But the only weird way I could logic it was, if they had character moments between these crew members, if we'd ever seen them just chatting or whatever else, you could have established that she's, because she's an android, that she like thinks so logically.
She's
it's
not
like,
an android.
Well,
she's not cybernetic.
Augmented human. Augmented human who seems to go towards her computer side quite a bit. I'm just wondering if, like, they've basically, in their heads, basically thought that they had got across to us that she's so logically thinking she wouldn't give up her life unless it was so critically needed, that they know that she would mathematically worked out as opposed to sacrificing her life for emotion. That's the only weird, twisted, but it's like, but they never showed us that.
You'd have to have character developments in the show for us to
do you know what?
If they'd shown us that and there was like at one stage, she had to get to where she was sacrificed alive, because earlier on she didn't see the logic in doing that because of
that's why the Death didn't sort, like we said at the time when she got killed, and it was meant to be one of these really devastating moments for the audience, but they hadn't developed the character, so showing us in one episode about her and then killing her didn't really work for anyone.
Now
this scene really, like it should have been so much more impactful to have her back from the dead, and it just wasn't. Sorry,
Jack. I thought they were going to go back to that episode, because the sort of recurring motif of that episode is that she keeps watching that memory that she's got stored of Owo, I think. And I thought Michael was going to say, look, you don't believe me, but let me tell you, I know that you've got that clip that you watch on repeat, and I know that that's the memory that you've saved above all the others.
Yeah.
How would I know that unless you haven't told me that yet? You know,
because we know that in the future in the Star Trek universe, they have huge memories, they're great at memory storage. And this was brought up in DS9, like they work on smaller and smaller devices. And we see it in our own time. To get more memory on. But with Arium's case, he decided just to give her a 12-hour buffer.
Well, that was it. But yeah, I would have liked for it to have pulled from an episode that we knew, so we could go, we remember that.
Yeah.
Rather than a behaviour that is not atypical for a Starfleet officer anyway. Like, well, of course she'd do that.
Yeah.
Or have her cameo be in a different moment and, like, have her in there and have this moment with Saru, like, where he's got his threat ganglia and he's, like, acting out of fear, and, like, Burnham talks him round to, like, no, see, you're braver than you'll ever realize. Good.
Yeah.
You know, and that would be so much within his arc as well.
Yeah.
But this is, like, the one character that they've obviously been able to get back for the episode.
Yeah, seemingly. And
like
then,
to your point before, like they've got other episodes where you know she's like, in. They could film one, like, bridge episode.
And it's like it was really emotional for everyone watching. Honestly, when you died, it was the biggest episode ever. So it would be really impactful if you come back and everyone's going, oh, it's that character that we knew nothing about.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she's acting her socks off, but it's like based on nothing we've established already.
It could have been worse. It could have been her with the little mouth things from the Enterprise.
Oh, she was good.
Yeah. When they give us one episode about her before she went as well. Anyway, okay, so I thought the bit that worked better was where you've got Michael and Reese confronting Rayner and Stamets, and that played really well to this arc that they're doing with Rayner. Like, right, I do know you because I found that out the other week, and I'm going to use that knowledge.
Yeah. I'm going to use my 20 words that you gave me.
Yeah.
Tell something about yourself that you've never told anyone.
The thing was, they're all telling Rayner, right, information is not a connection, but earlier in the episode, he does have a bit of a connection with Michael because she tells him how she felt when she was first on Discovery, and he uses that. So that arc for Rayner has been really well plotted out this episode. It ties into the conclusion of the episode. Really well done. And yeah, and then they get back to their own time. And Rayner seems to have a gammy hand. Is this going to be ongoing plot point? Or do you think...
No, they said they were going to fix it then and there.
Okay, well, I'm just putting it out there. If next week, if we keep getting Rayner trying to hide his gammy hand from everyone,
but it is established because it's established at the end that they were in the time loop for 6 hours.
Yes.
They only lost six hours, which puts them back on. They can catch up easy to Mal and Locke. Because in the alternate timeline, Zara did tell them that it was...
they were caught in it for years.
No, it was about 3 weeks.
Oh, 3 weeks, was it? Sorry. But it had all gone wrong by the time they came out of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, David's leaving. Bye, David. See you, David. Right, so my question is...
I'll say on the hand thing, just very quickly... Just because they said in the episode they were going to fix it. But, like, I also like that they've already pre-established, like, DNA resequencing is something they've done before.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice that they've got that. Even though they don't mention it, they've already established technology which they're going to use to fix it. that's the first thing my head went to, and it's really nice. That shows that they have come up with some really cool technology and stuff in this new timeline.
They get back to the current time, and they go, right, we can follow the warp trail of Mal and Locke. They're going to the next clue. How do Mal and Locke know where the next clue is? Because when we started the episode, Discovery had come to the coordinates, and there was nothing there.
Well, maybe we're going to find that out next week. That one, I'll give them some time.
Yeah.
You probably won't. But
the way they said it was, we know they're going to the next clue. Yeah, but now it wasn't where you thought it was.
It's almost like in the 6 hours that they've been stuck there, Mal and Locke have arrived at the same place. They've watched them fucking about for 6 hours.
Ah, okay. So Mal and Locke.
There has actually been something there, and they've solved the clue.
Right, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, it does seem like there should be something, like, but just they can't see it.
Yeah, there was something there. Mal and Locke have found there, it. And
when
now
they first got there, they didn't find it for reasons.
No, I like that. And actually, that is a very deft bit of plotting then, because they've cleverly taken Mal and Locke from being a step behind to being a step ahead, so that the whole plan with the time bug has actually worked out perfectly for them.
Also makes Locke and Bolt a bit more of a threat.
They wanted him stuck forever, but
the whole thing is that you need all the parts so even if Discovery had been ended up stuck in that time loop for 3 weeks and Mal and Locke had gone on and they'd got the other three pieces or however many, I think it's
they
wouldn't have the first two. So how does that work?
They
still need to get onto Discovery and take it from Discovery.
Well, two things I wonder. I wonder if they've got some way of disabling the device when they want to then board
together
bits. Or they didn't they mention at some point a time, like there was an expiry date on it, like it does eventually wear out or something? I'm sure they said something along those lines.
They said 3 weeks later the Federation found you and towed you back to space stock.
I thought they said there was a, like, the device,
like
the
natural lifespan.
I don't know. No, they said that it could run for years and years if just left running.
Oh, okay. I thought
it could just keep running.
Or to be honest with you, they could have just figured out that the Discovery would eventually find a way around.
Yeah.
Which is why I think it went to engine room, so it has the power to just keep running and running and running.
Yeah.
It'll run until it uses up all of the mushrooms and...
Yeah,
and mushrooms and they've got a massive plantation of mushrooms on Discovery, so that keep growing, so it potentially could keep going indefinitely. Oh,
speaking of which, we also missed, like, there was the mushroom comment, but then, like, Stamets goes, like, right, everyone out of here, I'm in a bad mood. It's like,
yeah, that was very good.
It worked as well.
Yeah.
It was just genius. And a nice callback. He's just, I love how self-aware Stamets is one of my favorite journeys in Discovery, just to go from such a grumpy asshole. And basically, as soon as he goes into the mushrooms, that kind of gets him into the new zone. But it's like, it's just such a wonderful, complex character. You know, he always had the heart in there, but it's just, yeah, I love it. I love it.
And the episode finishes, and I can't help but feel like they're trolling us deliberately now, because we made jokes about Michael saying, let's fly, and the episode finishes with like the way Avengers Age of Ultron finishes, where Cap nearly says Avengers Assemble, but it cuts out before he does. And yeah, what's the other one? Black Panther finishes where it says, what's your name? And they're at. And yeah.
And the teenaged Fantastic Four at the end is like, what's your name? It's like,
trope, but the fact that they do it now with Michael about to say let's fly, when it's almost like they know we're taking the piss out of it. I feel like that was made just for us, that moment.
And I missed it. I'm not going to lie. I missed it. I actually missed it. I missed her saying let's fly because we've made such sport of it. I was like, oh, she's gonna say it.
That's it.
You bitches, you played us our own game, and hats off, you win. Like they get it first.
That's it. If she doesn't say it again before the end of the season, I'm going to be so disappointed now, even though it's a crap catchphrase. But anyway, we'll wrap up there then. So we will be back next week with the next episode.
What's up, Elliot? Sorry, Elliot, I think.
Just a second. I've got a problem.
Oh.
Oh.
Do we need to discuss it off air?
Oh, no, it's okay. I have just sorted it, I think.
What is it? Sorry, I thought it was Jermaine.
No, I don't think it's a serious problem.
I have sussed it out.
Transmitting it now, Kirk.
I am transmitting it now. There we go.
There we go.
What happened? What?
That happened. It now says let it lie in our comments.
Please.
I do want to say we have lost commenting from Facebook because I put it on Facebook first and it hasn't come through.
There we go then. So yeah, commenting only on YouTube unless we can figure it out. Okay, so we'll wrap up there. Next week we'll be back with the next episode where we'll see what happens with Mal and Locke. And in the meantime, you can get in touch with us at RetrekPod. We're RetrekPod@gmail.com. You can find us on all the socials, including Retrek Model Studios.
I'll have to move back where I'm building this thing that now has access points.
That has progressed a lot in the last week.
Amazing.
And for anyone who's just listening on audio, do check out Retrek Model Studios to see what Elliot's talking about.
There's about another foot to go on this.
You're going to get neck cramp from that thing.
Yeah, this is what I was worried about.
It's made of foam and papier-mâché. There's hardly any weight to it.
You're not going to make it through doors, though.
It looks heavier than it should be. It's very, very light.
Right, okay, one of us has got to get the model of the Starship Enterprise on our head.
Dr. Squee, what have we got going on the Dr. Squee show this week?
Well, it's funny because I mentioned Willow's birthday. We should also just very quickly give a shout-out to Jack Taylor from the High Council of Geeks for his birthday as well, just because it happens to be. But also, I just found out by complete coincidence, it's the fourth birthday this month of the Dr. Squee show. And I only found that out because I was going to put out a kind of one of the audio interviews, which I did earlier on, and it was actually the first episode. And I went to put it on and I saw the date stamp and it was from April 2020. And it's with Tim Brooke Taylor, the late, great Tim Brooke Taylor. Anyone who doesn't know who he is, he's done, I'm sure I'm included on radio and I'm sure I'll read that again for over 50 years. He did that. This was one of the last interviews he ever did. He passed away from COVID weeks later. Actually, stepped up releasing the Dr. Squee show because of it. He co-wrote the Four Yorkshiremen sketch for anyone who knows that.
Classic.
He was a contemporary of all the Pythons and he was in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory amongst so many other things.
He was a big member of the Goodies.
Oh God, the Goodies, of course. And he was a, just very quickly, sorry, but like I used to listen to him and watch this stuff, including the Goodies, and I'm sorry I haven't a clue. I used to listen to him in the car with my dad, who's also no longer with us. So getting to meet him was a huge, big, fat, hairy deal, and to be one of the last interviews he ever did meant a lot to me. So please, it's a wonderful interview. Please check it out. It's going to be up on Thursday, 7 o'clock, Dr. Squee, youtube.com/Dr. Squee.
Yeah. Check that out. And
we have, before we go, we do have a new merch request.
Oh, let's fly t-shirts. We might get sued. We might.
It depends how we do them.
It does depend how we do them. We'll have a think about that.
We better have enough budget for that one and the Admiral Silver Daddy Bear t-shirts I want to do as well.
We'll have a think about future t-shirt designs then.
And we'll still have a Daddy Bear on the front and just Let's Fly in the back.
And we'll be back next week to cover the next episode. But for now, let's fly.
Let's fly.
Let's fly, Dragon LLP.